Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College presents Liberty Mail with the student fellows of Faith and Freedom.
Hello and welcome to Liberty Mail. I'm Grace Riley.
And I'm Aaron Jenks.
And we are so happy to have you here for this episode today. It is the Christmas season, which is so exciting. We're here at the Underground Studio for Grove City College for the Institute for Faith and Freedom. And today, we're going to be talking about some important political topics. As they'll probably come up, since it's the holiday season, things are known, political discussions are known to come up at the dinner table and around the time that we all get reunited with our families. So with that considered, we thought that we would break down some common arguments for some issues that pretty commonly come up, including abortion, socialism, student loan debt, and free college, gun control, and more. So we're excited to talk a bit about that today. And also, we just want to remind you that we're going to be having some special edition episodes coming out over the break that will be on for school. So we'll have an episode with Newt Gingrich, Paul Kengor, just did an episode with Katie Kenline, which will be good. We did an episode with our producer, Olivia Whiteman, which will be great. So a lot of really great content to look forward to. But yeah, a lot of exciting things coming up.
Yeah, those will be fun episodes. We're going to dive into more like interview style podcasts, which would be cool to just learn about what's going on in Grove City, some other students. And then also, like we said, we have Newt Gingrich who came on, and there are a couple of other special videos. And then look what our producer Olivia made. So this is very nice for festive on the Christmas season.
Yeah, so for those listening without YouTube, we have a nice Christmas backdrop, which is very nice that Olivia made for us. So excited about that, getting us in the mood for the season. So
I always forget to mention that. I just watch the video. The video is better. You get to see what's going on.
Yeah.
but we can hop right into it. But make sure you see those special episodes coming up. But we'll hop right into the first topic. And we first wanted to say that, yeah, these are going to pop up during maybe the holidays, during Christmas dinner. Even I'm sure some popped up during Thanksgiving. But the issue of being pro-life, if you're listening to this and you are fit that category of being a Christian, being a person of faith, usually if not, you're going to fall into the category of being pro-life. And you're going to have the conversation during the Christmas that, oh, well, abortion should be a fundamental right of healthcare. And you're going to have to understand how to deal with that. And especially you see it coming up that maybe the right or Christians really want assertive control over women's bodies. And it's part of this patriarchal oppression system. So, Grace, what is the first thing that you would kind of hit that topic with if you had to respond to that?
Yeah, so the left does make that argument pretty frequently, actually. So thinking about that, I would first say, well, it's the right isn't trying to control a woman's body. The whole point is to protect life and preserve life. So starting with when life begins, it begins scientifically at conception. And when a baby is formed in the womb, it has unique DNA. It has its own unique heartbeat. It has its own set of hands, feet, brain, everything. So with that considered, that baby is its own person, its own being, and it's not the woman's body. The woman's body is her own body, but the baby, again, has its own set of DNA, its own heartbeat, making it its own body. So I would first say, well, thinking through that scientifically, the baby's not part of the woman's body. So in that case, that should not be an argument for ending the baby's life. And just kind of moving on from that, one of the things that people say a lot and follow that up with on the left is people on the left will say, well, the baby can't sustain life, though. It can't sustain itself. Mm-hmm. It needs the mother. It feeds off the mother. So it's part of the mother's body, effectively. And in that case, it should be able to be aborted. And to that, I would say again that, well, no, it's a life, clearly and scientifically, and we should place value on life because life has intrinsic value. And in looking at that, what would you say to maybe elderly patients or patients in a coma or toddlers who can't sustain themselves alone either? When you have a baby that you give birth to and you have a toddler, they need the mother still at that point to help to sustain them, to get them food, to take care of them, keep them safe. So technically, the baby isn't sustainable or can't sustain life at that stage either. So it would be wrong to say that you should abort a baby on that premise, because then you're effectively saying that if you can't completely be dependent on yourself, which is not making sense for most of people's lives. When they're older, younger, they need other people to help them, that then abortion's okay. And I would argue, well, no, it's not ever okay, because life is still life, and that's not a reason.
Yeah, those are great points. And to start the conversation off, I think that's good to kind of put into someone's face. And then personally, when I think about it, I'm trying to like expand the conversation a little bit, because I do think that when people kind of assert the pro-abortion right kind of point of view, they're very either limited or very assertive and strong and opinionated in, okay, this has to happen. And I don't think they give a lot of thought to like maybe other situations, or even like, okay, who's going to bring opinions to the table? And I really think it's like a triangle within our society. So you have the Christian view with like definitely morality plays into it, and you have protecting this child who is a child. And then maybe you do have the atheist, or you have this, I won't lump in atheist, but you have the secular view where, okay, well, no, this is more of an issue of rights. And then you do have the humanist view, I think, in our society, which is a ton, is, okay, morality is a thing, but we get to determine when morality should be subjected to either people or specifically in like with abortion, and they can apply it in different situations. And I believe if, Olivia, if you want to look this up, but I think it's Steven Pinker says this, and he says, if I was in charge, I would argue to place abortion limits to like 3 years old, because like you said, that child is still dependable or dependent on that mother. And so he said it should be the mother's choice. So you have different like frames of reference of who's arguing, and just putting those on the table to like see who you're talking to, or to see where they're coming from. Because where do they fit in that kind of triangle of opinions? And you can really hit the kind of the nail on the head a little harder.
Yeah, and I think just looking at that and where people are coming from is the exact point and the exact starting place for pro-life Christians when having this conversation as well. Because starting with life, the value of life, and just starting from there and kind of working outwards, I think, is the answer. Because if, as a society and culture, we start placing value on life, as we should, as a whole, and understanding that this isn't just a religious argument that life begins at conception, it's a scientific argument, too. So talking, really having that hard conversation of, well, when does a life become a life? When is life considered valuable and worth saving? I think having that conversation first, and also talking to people about what abortion really is, because a lot of people don't know what abortion is, what it means in that process. So whenever people understand, and Live Action, a pro-life organization, does a good job of this, they show people videos of what happens in an abortion, because it's a violent thing, and that changes their minds because they didn't know that it was that abortion happens the way it does. So I think just pointing to those things is important.
Yeah, that's definitely important. And then I also say, trying to dig at why they believe, especially in my mind, if they use the like rhetoric of rights, and this is a woman's right, dive into that with whoever you're talking to at the family table or in the living room watching football. And, okay, well, what is more important? Is rights the objective kind of bedrock that you want to build this case on? Or are there further elements of the pro-abortion case that you also believe in? Because I'm going to tear down, or at least argue against the pro-abortion case and bring in morality, bring in scientific evidence that, okay, yeah, this life is beginning earlier, right at conception. And so dig into like the why behind it with your whoever you're talking to.
Yeah, with anything, that why is so important. And just moving along to another topic, which, again, that why is going to really come into play. But so something that we know now, researchers have found, is that around 60%, so a majority of young people, Gen Z, millennials, support socialism. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a pretty alarming statistic, I think, because it's an ideology that's failed everywhere it's been tried, every time it's been tried. But yet, a lot of the people in our generation support that. And even in the midterm elections, my generation voted for, and Aaron's too, obviously. So our generation voted.
Making me feel like I'm
30. Yeah, our generation voted largely for the left. So in looking at that, why do you think that so many young people think socialism is a good idea? And if you've got a socialist family member that thinks that's good at the table, what would you say?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've had these conversations with friends, like even over Thanksgiving break, kind of, where I think so often there's not a misconception, but they misconstrue the kind of framework of what's happening in America, and they say, okay, well, these are all the things that I see that's wrong in our society, and I'm going to tie that connect it to capitalism and democracy in America, and so those things need to change. And so I always kind of probe my friends either back home, and then you should do it the same, I think, at your house during Christmas, is how do you actually see, like, the thing, like, say the things that you think are going horrible in the society, and how does that directly being caused or affected by democracy? And then secondly, I want to point them towards that area, because look throughout history, and any good historian, you'll hear it time and time again, and it almost is a cliche, but it's 100% fact, is that socialism fails in every situation, every country that it has been implemented in.
Yeah, and Marxism really does go against human nature. And we can see examples of this throughout history and now in the world. And I always ask the question, too, if socialism is so great, then why are there so many people fleeing their homes in socialist countries to come to America to find freedom? If it's so great, then why is that? And why aren't Americans fleeing capitalism to go to socialist failing countries? I think that's another question that really opens a lot of people's eyes, because there's not an answer for that. It's, well, the answer is because socialism is a failure, and the free market helps people to have opportunities, build wealth, build better lives for themselves and their families than generations past. So,
yeah, absolutely. And when we talk about this, I think maybe something we've left out so far is, okay, maybe we are talking about it in two different constants of, okay, we have Marxism or socialism in the absolute versus capitalism or democracy in the absolute. And so a lot of people in our generation especially, I think they're like, okay, well, a mixture will work. Look at the Scandinavian countries. A mixture does work. And if I hear that, I go to, okay, well, look at these. Specifically, the people love to point out the Scandinavian countries and say, look at the populations of these countries. Look at the diversity of these countries. And what you find is it's very low population. It's almost the size of like a city in the United States. And then the diversity is huge, proportionally hugely low. It's largely white populations. So when you're trying to implement this, you're not dealing with societal problems that you see in America. And just think that one method of fixture across the sea is going to work for a completely different situation. I always am like, what do you think about that then?
Yeah.
Without me saying, personally, I don't think that's ever going to work, or I don't think that's smart logic. But do you see this breakdown when I'm talking to a friend or a family member?
Exactly. And those countries have their problems as well. The tax rates there are through the roof on cars and other things. The tax rates are super high. So that's something we haven't experienced here. And so that's another thing to consider. It's not just some utopia over there. There are plenty of problems there that would manifest in implication here, in accordance with the other things that you mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, just going along that track, kind of, people say that democratic socialism is fine. It's, well, if socialism's democratic, then it's great. That's the perfect medium mix. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of candidates have run on in the United States. It's been part of mainstream discussion.
Super popular in our generation.
Yeah, it is. So why do you think that is? And why is democratic socialism still bad? Because I would argue it is.
Well, I want to hear your thoughts majorly on this. But I mean, it's kind of what I just said.
Yeah.
I feel is a lot of pulling into this question, too, is that, okay, well, you're assessing a situation and the problems in America and thinking that this is the solution without any really like quantifiable data or anything to back it up. And so often, I mean, I'm a political science major, and so it's not I feel or think about something. It's what can data actually show me? What is some qualitative research on a case study that has happened? And then how can I tie this into a possible solution in politics? That's the realm. It's not I feel this way, I think this is going to work. Those lead to negative consequences in policy.
Yeah, and I would say for this, first we can take a step back and look at some results. So, for example, in Venezuela used to be one of the richest, most prosperous companies. They had oil, all of these things. So it was a very prosperous country. But then Nicolas Maduro ran on democratic socialism, and now it's a full-blown socialist country with Chavez, and it's a failing country now. that's completely overtaken by poverty. There's no opportunity to move up in that country, meaning in wealth or in opportunity. And it's a country that's now completely different than it was years ago before socialist leaders took rule. But in that, their marketing strategy to become democratically, I say in quotes, elected was by saying, well, this is democratic socialism. You're just electing it. But that's clearly not what played out in that country and also in others. But just in breaking that down a little further, in the United States, there are politicians like Bernie Sanders, for example, that say they're democratic socialists. And same thing with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says the same thing. I would say, well, it's still socialism. It doesn't really matter what fancy charismatic term you put in front of it. It's still socialism, and it still has the same end result. And if you look at these politicians' policies, the policies that they're proposing are more parallel to something in Venezuela and are parallel to socialist policies. So saying that it's just democratic and fine is not an effective solution, because it's actually just socialist and will have that, you know, effect. And it's true. Lenin said that, I believe it was Lenin, said that communism is the goal of socialism. So even with democratic socialism being thrown around, the goal of that is still to move further into Marxism and come up with that more Marxist perfect society, which, as we've talked about many times on this show, is not achievable, and it goes against human nature. And the whole thing would just fail.
So, yeah, and Marx writes that right in the Communist Manifesto. I'm sure Lenin probably quoted it every once in a while. But when we think about this, and especially when you bring up, okay, yeah, there's politicians in the United States that are running on this platform to kind of implement change that they see as more socialist. And I always think it's a breakdown when I have this conversation with someone. Okay, well, they kind of idolize, I think, democracy in a sense that, like, almost like if you read like Plato and you think about democracy as a whole, as a political system, and they think that it doesn't involve the republic sense, that what we have in America. And you'll see that kind of rhetoric being used, that democracy is at stake, and characterizing America as purely a democracy. And I think that's just a fundamental either like ploy or a lack of understanding that, okay, yes, we are a democratic republic, and how does that change who we are and how our government works versus if we were a democracy versus what they want is a socialist democracy. And how that's going to implement having more people kind of, or I mean, fewer people making the decisions for the larger amount of people.
Yeah. And the whole point of the constitutional republic, again, is there for a reason. And that's why our nation functions that way. And yeah, I just say again that calling something democratic socialism does not make it democratic.
And then how about if someone, when I feel like this comes up a lot, it's, the wealth gap in America is so drastic, and that is increasingly been occurring over the past, I don't want to say like 50 years, and that's a fact in America. But then they point to, we just need to tax the rich. That's the solution. Why are these people living such luxury or luxurious lives when you have millions of Americans who are in poverty?
Yeah. Well, what happens in socialist countries, and what would happen at that point, is sure, go ahead, tax the rich, and then what? Is the question really? It's there. You can only do that so much until you're kind of out of money to redistribute. And then just looking at the economy as a whole, how is that going to work? Because when you have a free market, you can incentivize hard work, build opportunity, create more jobs, create more wealth, and have a prosperous economy where people can work hard, create better lives for themselves and their families than their past generations. You have that prosperous system, basically, with the free market. When you decide to tax people if they are earning more money, that takes away that incentive for people to work hard. And it creates a system where people end up stuck living on welfare because they can, and they know the government will just redistribute whatever money. So it creates basically a whole broken system that doesn't work, and that hasn't worked anywhere, again, is an important thing to note. So I think even in talking to people about this, I think a great place to start is asking, where's the line for that? Because asking where's the line, Yeah, asking where's the line. Well, okay, so if you do tax the rich, well, what then? What happens when there's not any, like, if you keep kind of going down that stream, I think that's a good way to have that conversation. Mm. And also talking about, again, what it would mean for the rest of the economy and the rest of the economic implications that that would then have for people working in America. And again, that takes away the creation of jobs when you do that, too. So it's, I think talking about all those things is a really good way to approach that.
Yeah. And then here, try this out if you're having this argument or conversation, sitting down on the couch drinking a beer or sitting at the dining room eating your whatever you eat for your meal for Christmas. But you go, okay, well, let's find some common ground on this topic of where we should move forward with our political system. And the first question that I'll ask any of my friends is, do you trust government? Do you trust these politicians or these career politicians? And even yourself, Grace, I feel like, what's your answer? Yeah,
no.
So even myself, I'm usually an optimist in life, in my faith and how I have relationships with people. But, oh, my God, like, government and politics, it's one area in life where I will constantly probably be a pessimistic. When I'm thinking about, do I trust this institution?
And
do I trust most people?
Most people think that. Most people you would ask, especially Generation Z, younger people.
Oh,
that you would
there's
ask
a ton
this.
Of distrust, yeah.
Yes, there is distrust. I've never talked to anyone that says outright, oh, I trust them fully. So most people, no matter what side of the political aisle they're on, don't trust the government or politicians. Most people on the left, for example, would say, no, of course we don't trust Donald Trump. Like, that would be, like, just for example. So the thing is then, so if we all agree that we don't trust the government, why should we give them more power?
More power. And then when I have that conversation is, okay, why do you want to change stuff so fast? Or at least take a step back and have restraint in the change that you have. So just because we don't trust and we have all maybe trust issues in America with government doesn't mean that we can't progress forward and have change for the net positive in America, but have restraint in that change. And that's where I think conservative comes in, where you have wisdom and prudence in what the changes that you're implementing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's so true. And in just moving on to something similar, student loan debt, free college, that's been coming up a lot, and I guess not as much anymore, because what was interesting, Biden was proposing that there would be loan debt forgiveness for anyone from college, but then after the midterms, a judge struck that down and said it was unconstitutional, but still the issue comes up, should there be loan forgiveness for everyone in colleges? And I think that the answer to that goes right along with what we just talked about with socialism. But do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm thinking about, okay, well, just simply, where is the money going to come from? And maybe you do assess that at the end of the day, this is worth pouring taxes into. And okay, maybe your family member even will say, no, it's worth the tax money. It's worth the government funds forgiving these loans. But at least have that conversation first and make them come to that conclusion that they need to say that this is worth it. Instead of student loans are a good thing and people ought to have their loans forgiven. Because on the base value, you're going to get a lot of people saying yes and agreeing with that just because it sounds nice and it would be nice to have that money go away. But then draw them into what's going to happen. And if you are inclined to economic kind of effects and ripples of maybe a program like this happening or any other type of government programs, draw them into those details too, I'd say.
Yeah, and I just think too, again, on that line of where the money's going to come from and whatnot, I think in general, our generation should be thinking about being more financially responsible, because I've done everything I can, for example, to not take out loans, to try to make sure that I can afford things that I'm buying effectively and not becoming hugely in debt. And obviously it makes sense with how expensive colleges are today. It's crazy. That's why so many people take out loans. But I think that the way that people look at paying for these super expensive colleges, those prices are way too high also, and it's ridiculous. But the way people decide to pay for those, what degrees they're pursuing, because certain degrees do not come out with enough money to even pay those debts off. So I think financially, looking going into the future, people should be considering that and taking responsibility for any loans they take out, and in what they're studying, what college they're going to, and because that's how the world works. And it's not a good thing. There's plenty of problems with how expensive college is and the loans and whatnot. There are plenty of problems there. It's not to say that there aren't.
Well,
Yeah,
what you're saying with looking towards the future, I think that's super wise. And especially in that conversation, I think it's smart to do is frame that conversation. Okay, well, going forward, how do we just avoid that problem in all of these people being financially in hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt going to college? Like you said, look towards the future. How do we fix this problem and be proactive about it so we don't need the government to step in?
Well, and it's also just thinking about the fact that if we made financial decisions to not be in debt after school, we should not have to pay for other people's debt if they made decisions to take out loans that they couldn't pay back. That's like a socialist idea that won't work in practice. There shouldn't be taxes going out to Americans that didn't take out loans to make up for Americans that did, because that's where the money comes from. The answer to where does the money come from is it comes from the American taxpayer's pocket, because that raises everyone's taxes. So the whole thing is really a problem, but it looks like that's not happening now, but it certainly is a discussion that has been coming up a lot.
Mm-hmm. So I've thought this whole podcast and how we framed this episode with going through these holiday Christmas questions was super fun to go through. It was fun to kind of prep for this a little bit. And then I hope this was helpful for anyone listening. That
yeah, and a nice, fun, just casual Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just going into the season, talking about some of these issues, because we talk about a lot too how these conversations come up and figuring out the best way to kind of approach them, go about them, questions to maybe ask people that disagree with you are all important things to understand and discuss. So this has been a fun episode.
And my last 2 cents for having these conversations is try to find that middle ground or some commonality in your arguments. And then also don't let yourself get heated. I mean, I fall victim to it too, but your feelings and emotions are important in your life. But when you're having a conversation, they really hurt when you're trying to reach out to someone
and
convey your opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, focusing on listening, asking questions, looking for that why, like why people think what they think, and then moving from there in a respectful way.
Absolutely. So thank you for tuning in to Liberty Mail today. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. And if you're watching on YouTube, please click the like and subscribe bell. And then on Spotify, we thank you for listening. And any other platform, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
For more information on the Institute for Faith and Freedom, visit faithandfreedom.com.